Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:39 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is October 14th. And I saw this article in here today talking about quant funds being 100% short on money markets. And anytime you see that kind of headline, 100% short, well, that tells us that anyone who wants a short probably already has a short position. And that then leaves the way open for a short squeeze, and we're definitely getting that. So when we look at government bond yields, they're coming down, and that was we saw the beginning of that yesterday with some volatility on the 5-year, and it came down in here today. When we think about the gilt in the UK, it's been down 3 days in a row and in a reasonably dynamic manner, and this has been a pretty universal phenomenon right across the world. So we're starting to see yields coming back down because there was this assumption that yields can only go up. It doesn't necessarily mean that inflation has suddenly left the building. Far from it. But the reality is that when we think about the pace of tightening, central banks are going to have to be extraordinarily cautious because they daren't risk the potential that they're going to throw their economies back into recession. So there is the potential that they're going to result in slower growth, if not negative growth, and then that should be beneficial for bonds overall. Well, if there is going to be a slower pace of unwinding, and where central banks have to remain cautious about the pace with which they remove accommodation, that's positive for risk assets. So we had a meaningful rebound in technology shares in here today. The NASDAQ was up in excess of 1%, well in excess of 1%. The Dow Jones was up nearly 500 points. The S&P 500 up 1.6%. So this is a rather significant rebound. It pretty much unwound most of the overbought condition relative to the trend mean. So it's finding support just about where it needed to. And in fact, this has been a smaller reaction than the last two significant reactions we've seen. So we're still broadly in a consistent trending environment. Now, the next point is that it will have to hold the low and then subsequently push on to new all-time highs. And provided it can do that, well, then we're still in a consistent trending environment overall. We're also starting to see that risk is starting to come back in, or appetites are starting to come back in to some of the more oversold environments. So we've had the solar sector rallying because it's very interest rate sensitive. And it's now in the region of the trend mean, but it has bounced in a dynamic manner from that $80 area. The wind ETF has done the same thing, so it's bouncing in a reasonably dynamic manner. Then we can think about some of the more speculative portions of the renewable energy sector, like hydrogen, and Plug Power has bounced emphatically, and that was a crushing decline, coming from 75 down to 20. So there's certainly the potential here for a regrouping if we're moving back into something of a risk-on environment. And there was a lot of commonality today and yesterday in the hydrogen sector. So we're certainly seeing a return to demand dominance following what were rather lengthy periods of consolidation for most of this year. So there are obviously rational questions and debates to be had about what can be expected from wind, for example, in Europe, and has the stillness that's been experienced in the wind in the UK and Northern Europe over the last few months, is that out of the ordinary? Is it part of a shorter-term trend or a longer-term trend? And unfortunately, the problem is that we just do not have the data. The longest data that appears to be available goes back to the 1960s. So, yes, that would say, well, we've got approximately 50 years, maybe a little more, of data. But when we think about longer term weather patterns and the variability of weather, particularly in Northern Europe, well, then that does raise big questions about wind and the overall variability of intermittent sources of electricity. What was interesting is that despite the big decline we've seen in the natural gas price in the UK, going from 400 to 200, it has been up in a dynamic manner over the last 2 days. So it's a low of at least near-term significance, and it suggests that we are not at the end of this rather difficult environment in terms of very high energy prices right across Europe. US natural gas prices were also firmer in here today, although wasn't quite able to hold on to all of the advance. Oil prices were up about a dollar and continuing to firm from the $80 area. We've also seen that companies like Royal Dutch Shell and BP, for that matter, have broken up and out of their respective base formations. That is suggesting that there is still life in these companies and that they do benefit from higher oil prices and higher gas prices. And since they have pretty much given up on borrowing and spending money on exploration, then a lot of these higher prices that they can now sell their products for go to the bottom line. So there is certainly potential for continued upside. Now, as we think about the fact that we're moving back into more of a risk-on environment, we're certainly also seeing a lot of interest in the commodity complex. So gold prices were a little bit steadier again in here today, holding around the $1,800 area. I'm psychologically attached to that area because it's my break-even, but I still think that this looks like a rounding or an evolving rounding characteristic overall, that we have an emerging triangular pattern. Once it is completed, we're going to have dynamic moves that are surprising and that will be out of character with the volatile environment we've been treated to over the last year. So, but we're still not quite there yet. Gold has to break the sequence of lower rally highs in order to reignite new sources of demand. Silver was also in positive territory today, not in as quite a dynamic manner as yesterday, but still up in an impressive manner. It's looking increasingly likely that's a failed downside break below the $22 area. And if that is indeed the case, well, it's not unreasonable to anticipate that we will see the $30 area tested again. Platinum also continues to extend its rebound, and we've had a meaningful rebound in gold shares. So, the GDX is now pulling away from the $30 area. It's up almost 10% this week or over the last 10 sessions, and now very close to breaking the sequence of lower rally highs since the peak back in April, May. But much more important than that is it's confirming support in the region of the upper side of what was effectively a 6.5 year base formation. And silver is still miles below where it peaked back in 2011. And before this bull market ends, it's quite likely that we're going to see gold shares trading out to new all-time highs, silver trading out to new all-time highs, and gold trading out to new all-time highs on a purchasing power parity basis. And that's not an ambitious target. On a purchasing power parity basis, gold has been ranging for a profound amount of time. And it's, I think, quite likely that it has fallen about as much as it's going to, and that we're going to see it pushing up and out of this range in the not so distant future. And even the spike high in 1980 is probably going to be taken out. And I think this is by far the most important chart with regard to gold. Because the peak back in 2011 brought us back to the all-time peak on a purchasing power parity basis. And it did not give up all of that advance in the same way that it had from that peak in 1980. And now it's starting to regroup in the region of that peak. So certainly it's all to play for here, and we're seeing some hedging of the inflationary prospects even as we move back into more of a risk-on environment. We had a pretty strong performance today as well in Europe, with the Euro stocks bouncing from the region of the trend mean. The Nifty index in India was up in a dynamic manner as well. We saw upside follow through today in Indonesia, Malaysia, and Singapore. India continues to benefit from a new credit cycle, and the banking sector is starting to firm there as well and play catch up with the wider market. So that's rather encouraging. You've got Narendra Modi talking about dismantling the policy silos within the Indian government that contribute to so much bureaucracy. There was an interesting article, and I think it's particularly interesting, that everybody knows about these silos and about the difficulty that has been present in trying to reform the bureaucracy in India, and many have lamented at how difficult that is. But there was an article on Bloomberg today talking about the inequality in New York and how different condominiums are taxed, and how the sector is rife with corruption. And that the inaccuracies that are evident and the disparities in the taxation can only be explained by graft. And that's extraordinarily difficult to stamp out. So even in highly developed countries, you have these silos, you have these kinds of bureaucratic pieces of infrastructure that are extraordinarily difficult to unwind. And any kind of progress that can be made in achieving that, regardless of what country it's in, is an enormous victory for governance. So if Narendra Modi can deliver on stamping out these silos and these fiefdoms within the government administration of India, and deliver on infrastructure growth, it's going to be a profound victory for the standards of governance. And that's an extraordinarily good reason for why India should do better. And then when you have banks starting to lend again, and the housing finance sector, which has come through a painful deleveraging, then there's the significant potential that it can re-lever over the course of the next 5 or 6 years, and that will help to fuel India's growth, where it's already growing at 8.5%. Now, of course, the big challenge for India will always be to try and hold down inflation while they're also supporting growth. But the stock market remains a relative strength leader internationally. And of course, that's all the more important as China remains a substandard performer. So the CSI 300 was in negative territory today, and still holding this area, but there's no evidence of clear fireworks. And then we can think about there's been a lot of institutions that have been eager to buy into the tech sector. But the tech sector still is, it's cheaper, there's no question of that, and we're in the region of lows. But it's still got work to do in order to really confirm that we're back on the front foot. I remain very much of the view that China is a trader's market, India is an investor's market. And when we think about the outlook for commodities, I've seen this argument and I've heard it repeated on numerous occasions that industrial resources are going to collapse because of the decline in the construction in China. And it sounds like a rational argument. And until, of course, you look at the prices. And copper has rebounded in an extraordinarily emphatic fashion this week. And it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs. And the LME Metals Index has continued to push up and out to new all-time highs. So, this is certainly encouraging. If we think about the arguments about supply and demand, and then the supply inelasticity meets rising demand has been most evident in copper. And it's been a lot more arguable in nickel because of the Chinese miners and processors' innovation in processing pig nickel. So, into high grade. So that has deterred and created a great deal of volatility in the nickel market. But we're back in the region of the 20,000 level, and it looks like a rounding base formation. And the price is firming from the region of the trend mean. So certainly, even here, where you don't quite have the supply inelasticity because of the new source of supply. Even here, we're starting to see evidence of base formation potentially in the process of being completed. Then, with nickel, it's obviously a major battery metal. Zinc isn't a battery metal, but it is pushing on the upside. But it's being aided by just the cost of energy and the lack of the ability to keep mines running when there's an absence of energy. So, this supply inelasticity of energy and the extreme prices that we've seen are contributing to supply deficits of just about everything. And this is contributing to significant inflationary pressures. These higher commodity prices will inevitably leak through into inflationary measures. And it's absolutely inevitable that people are going to demand more money. So we've now finished the tourist season. So that's one of the factors that's contributed to a lot of people that are not in the workforce and sort of hanging around. And now the question will be, what wages will have to be offered in order to encourage people to come back to work? And it's an awfully big question. So it's going to require more, and people have been tutored to demand more because they were paid more from just doing nothing at all during the pandemic, to having to go back to work for less money. It just doesn't make sense. So everyone has now been re-educated that they're worth more and that they should demand more and that the government and the social services have their back. So that's most particularly true in the USA. But the much bigger picture is that everyone, everywhere, is sick of fiscal austerity. And without fiscal austerity, there isn't much real potential that inflationary pressures are going to be brought back under control. And I think that is very different from what we had in the aftermath of the credit crisis in 2008, because we did have a big uptick in inflation in 2008, and we had a big recovery in industrial resources, obviously some more than others. And then it ended as balanced budget initiatives and caps on government spending and the sovereign wealth crisis leading to fiscal austerity in Europe, all of that contributed to lower growth, but positive growth, but slower growth, and less demand for commodities. So prices started to come back down. Well, in the absence of a new initiative for fiscal austerity, there isn't much that's going to help to bring down these commodity prices. And these supply bottlenecks might last for longer than people are willing to give credit to, and not least because energy prices continue to rise. So we are potentially now in a new inflationary environment. So commodities continue to advance, and gold prices are starting to steady. Of course, as people start to think about financial repression and the inability of central banks to meaningfully raise interest rates, well, then they're also looking at alternatives like cryptocurrencies. And Bitcoin is pulling up out of this range. It's approaching the peak from back in March, April. And really, a very clear downward dynamic would be required to question potential that we're not going to see additional upside. We are finally also starting to see some catch-up taking place in Ethereum, but the wider cryptocurrency market remains under pressure because of the threat of regulation. And the wider threat of regulation, particularly for the stable coins, is certainly worth paying attention to, because they hold a great deal of commercial paper, and nobody is exactly sure which commercial paper they own. So I think, in summary, we're back in more of a risk-on environment. The VIX index is starting to come back down, and it has now broken the sequence of higher reaction lows. So that's positive for assets overall. The fact that we have a very large short position that is now being put under significant pressure in the government bond markets is helping to support this move. Ultimately, we're going to have the question answered about exactly how quickly can they remove monetary accommodation. I suspect that it's going to take a good long time, and that is the kind of environment where we do get positive returns from stocks, but ultimately interest rates do rise and choke it off. And that might yet take a few more years. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.